And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson. Purdue University Northwest will enroll students in its first Master of Social Work cohort in fall 2025. Purdue Northwest has been building up several of its graduate level programs over the past couple of academic years and solidifying an interdisciplinary array of learning and research opportunities that are focused on mental health outcomes and needs for our local communities. This academic year marks the first year for cohorts in the master's and doctoral programs in psychology. Joining us now to share more about the program is Dr. Sharia Bhandari, the director of the MSW program and a professor of social work at PMW. Dr. Bhandari, thank you for joining us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Bhandari, as I shared in my opening, you are the director of the MSW program. You are a professor of social work at Purdue University, and you are a highly respected leader in social work education. And you're with us here today again to share more about the exciting news that the institution is currently recruiting students for the Master of Social Work program. Now, before we talk more about the program, share with the listening audience what led you to be named the director of the Master of Social Work program.
Yeah, so our Master's of Social Work program has been in the making for a few years now. As you know, we are located in the Northwest Indiana region, and we just don't serve students in Northwest Indiana, but the larger Chicagoland region. And we are in such a, you would say, a lack of mental health services, de-addiction services, so to speak, a mental health desert, that we really need a program that is affordable for students to be trained as professionals to work in our communities. And that is why, Purdue decided to launch this program. And we've been working very hard for the past 2 to 4 years in trying to start this program in this region.
I shared in the opening that the College of Humanities, Education, and Social Sciences is expected to enroll its first cohort in fall 2025. I would love for you to tell us more about the MSW curriculum and how the program will bring students new insight into disparities throughout our communities, as well as how social workers can be agents of change for the common good.
Absolutely. So our program will train students to work at all levels. One of the unique things about social work is that we train students to not just work with individuals and families, but we go beyond that, which is individuals, groups, families, organizations, and communities. So our students, the specialization of our program is advanced generalist. So while we'll have a good number of clinical courses focused on mental health, substance abuse, we will also have in our curriculum an equal number of courses focused on policy development, agency administration. And so when a student graduates from the Master's of Social Work program at Purdue University Northwest, they will be equipped to work in any setting and not just limited to a school or a hospital, but could work in the government, could work with an advocacy agency, so on and so forth. And that was done intentionally. The curriculum has been structured in this way that the student, you know, when they graduate, will have all the knowledge, skills that they need to work in a variety of settings and address the disparities in the region.
Dr. Bhandari, you shared at the start of our conversation that PNW has been building up several of its graduate-level programs over the past couple of academic years and solidifying an interdisciplinary array of learning and research opportunities that are focused on mental health outcomes and needs for our local communities. And I want to park on something that you just shared. So, and I think you said it, but I want to be sure that our listening audience hears this. So I want to ask you, will this new MSW program help meet the regional need for the social worker?
Yes, absolutely. And it will absolutely help meet the needs of, you know, social work in the region. And like you said, we are trying to make this as a hub of a variety of programs that students can choose from. So we already have a long-standing couples and family therapy program that has been around for almost 30 years. We newly launched our PsyD program this past fall, and then our mental health counseling program has also been around for some time. And the newly launched Masters of Social Work program is just, you know, the newer program that we are adding on to absolutely meet the needs of, you know, the social workers in the region. As most of our graduates, we live in our region, they want to live in our community. And so that is why there is a huge need of offering affordable graduate level education in a variety of disciplines, including social work.
As you were talking, and I'm going to go off script for a moment, because I want to talk more about social service needs, right? So we see law enforcement agencies across the country right now, including right here in the region, that are employing social workers to help them respond to certain emergency calls. And I remember reading an article just last summer that shared that public libraries in Boston are hiring social workers to assist patrons that have a variety of unmet needs, including food and housing insecurity, mental health challenges, and just a wide range of social problems. And again, parking on the increased need for more social workers, can you share more about what you see as social workers play a critical role in, I guess, bridging the gaps, providing essential services that help support community members thrive socially and emotionally?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you mentioned the police department. In fact, the LaPorte Police Department has a social worker, and the social worker who is placed there is a student of our Bachelor's of Social Work program.
Oh, wow.
That has been around for quite some time now. And we just got reaffirmed with our accrediting body, which is Council on Social Work Education, for the next 8 years. And we're very proud of that placement. So this student actually works with the police, and I think she's one of the first to be placed in this region, you know, as a police social worker. And so they do all kinds of things. They not just work with the community and, you know, respond to crisis calls and go out with the officers, you know, trying to de-escalate a very stressful situation. They also work, especially in the police department, work on the mental health needs of the police. We also have a faculty member in our program who has just started doing a little bit of work with the police addressing their mental health needs. So there is, it's kind of a twofold role. So one is the connection with the community and meeting the needs in the community, but also trying to address the mental health needs of these police officers who work in such stressful situations, in such stressful jobs. And so that's one place where, that's one of the many places where we need social workers. I'm also glad you mentioned libraries, because that is another place where social workers are needed, especially with a large number of, you know, homeless people who show up at the library, people who are looking for jobs who show up at the library. And so connecting them with resources, helping them, find jobs, helping them find housing, to taking it to the next level, I think all of those, there's absolutely a huge need for social workers in these settings.
And I'm glad that you shared how the social workers that will be working with law enforcement, as law enforcement agencies continue to bring on social workers, I'm glad you pointed out the importance of social workers not only helping to meet the need, responding to calls, but also helping first responders as well. I remember attending an event hosted by the Mac Foundation, I believe last year, 2024, and it was all about the mental health of first responders. That's why we're so excited to have you here today to just share the importance of why communities need social workers, this increased need for social workers. Now, before I let you go, the MSW graduates earn qualifications to begin careers in sectors, as we've shared throughout our conversation, as mental health, government, hospitals, schools, addiction centers, and advocacy centers. The program will prepare students for impactful careers. And I want to point out, I don't want our listening audience to miss something you said earlier in the conversation as well, is that PNW has worked hard to make sure that the program is affordable. So if anyone is listening and would like more information about the program, including how to apply, where can they find that information?
Yes, So the website to apply is bnw.edu/msw. And the application, the priority deadline is April 1st. We are very thankful to the College of Humanities, Education, and Social Sciences here at BNW to offer a limited number of graduate assistantships to students. And so it is kind of the assistantships will be offered on a first-come, first-basis. And so if there is any inclination for you to work in the community, work in hospitals or other settings that we talked about, you should definitely look at social work as an option. I would also like to add another piece that social work is a license-eligible profession. So when you graduate from our program, you will be eligible to apply to be a licensed social worker. And after your graduation, you can work under the clinical supervision of a licensed clinical social worker and get your LCSW, which basically means that you don't need supervision anymore. In other words, you can work independently, have your own private practice, and so on and so forth. So that is another important piece about the profession of social work, that we are license eligible and we do a lot of mental health work, you know, in a variety of settings.
Dr. Bhandari, I thank you so much for joining us today on Regionally Speaking, sharing information, obviously, about all of the graduate programs that are available at PNW, who has been working so hard to improve those programs, but specifically joining us today to share information about the program you represent as the director of the Master of Social Work. So I thank you for joining us, and we look forward to you guys getting a flood of applicants to become the next great social workers serving the community in the region.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Sharia Bhandari is the director of the Master of Social Work program, as well as a professor of social work at Purdue University Northwest. Applications for the Purdue University Northwest Master of Social Work program are currently being accepted for the fall 2025 cohort. For more information, visit www.pnw.edu/programfinder/masterdegreeinsocialwork. Tariff measures that are being levied by the White House will have a major economic impact right here in the region. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. Since the White House has imposed a wide range of tariffs, many Americans are concerned about the economic impact of these measures. Joining us now is Ersheng Leong, an economist with PNC Financial Services Group, Inc., to share an update on the local, statewide, and national economies. Ersheng, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having me again, Dee. My pleasure always.
Absolutely. So, Ersheng, we have to start with what is in the news, dominating the news, print, and broadcast right now. So I want to ask you, are there any updates on tariff measures, and what are some impacts brought by the trade measures under President Trump recently?
There are a lot of headings around tariffs these days, but with some grounded trade measures for sure. We got that U.S. imposed 10% tariffs on all imports from China, and there are a couple more coming, targeting countries like Canada and India, for example, as President Trump calls for reciprocal tariffs. So what are some impacts? Well, it hasn't been long since the measures took effect this month, but certainly the foreseen escalation of trade measures back in December last year has pushed businesses to stock up their inventories ahead of President Trump's in office and potentially have brought disrupted trade patterns. For example, you know, we observed that the U.S. nominal trade deficit brought into the highest level over the past 2 years in December 2024. You know, goods deficit were jumping, while services trade surplus were narrowing on the month. Larger deficit on the month was also caused by falling goods exports and rising imports in December, which were up 4%. So goods imports increased the most in industrial supplies and materials, specifically like imports of finished metal shapes rose more than doubled in December and larger than the annual gains made in 2024. So producers likely increased inventories for finished metal shapes in advance to, you know, some of the incoming tariffs with Canada and Mexico. So what are some possible, you know, future impacts of tariffs on businesses? We certainly were going to see some higher input costs associated with some of the, you know, aluminum and steel imports taxes, especially after the President Trump's plan to increase those. So affected industry can be wide, as indeed, you know, the use of aluminum and steel can be can stretch from, for example, household appliances to autos or even constructions. But how businesses will consume that, you know, higher input costs will need more time to see and how quickly those will be transferred on to consumers. So we will keep an eye on that. So these do not reflect some of the trade retaliations yet. We're at the early stages of those after President Trump inaugurated in January. You know, other countries could pose tariff measures on the U.S. as well, and then very likely we'll end up with higher bilateral trade measures.
Now, Oshank, can we talk about economic updates recently? I know the Fed kept rates unchanged in January. Are there any messages out of the FOMC meeting?
So that decision was actually largely expected. So the FOMC kept the Fed funds rate unchanged in late January in a range between 4.25% and 4.5%. So in the press conference, Fed Chair Powell suggests the FOMC is not ready to cut the Fed funds rate again until there are, you know, clear signs of softening readings on inflation or signs of deteriorations in the U.S. labor market. And PNC's baseline forecast is for two additional Fed funds rate in 2025 of 25 basis points each. But we think the timing of those cuts right now is uncertain. As previously, we were calling for another interest rate cut in March, but you know, because of more recent data on the U.S. economy and inflation, these would be more uncertain, and we would like to shift that into mid-2025. So, for example, our U.S. economy is still growing very strong. You know, real GDP increased at 2.3% in the fourth quarter of last year. That was a slowing from the growth in Q3, but still very solid. And on a year-ago basis, there was 2.5%. That was down from 3.2% in 2023, but still above the economy's long-run potential. Consumer spending growth was very strong, ending 2024. That was up 4.2% annualized after adjusting for inflation. That was contributing 2.8 percentage points to annualized real GDP growth. So really, economic growth was very solid ending last year and entering 2025. In the meantime, CPI inflation reaccelerated. You know, that was up to 3% for January, and the top line consumer price index inflation came at 0.5%, driven by, you know, not only higher energy costs and a bounce in food and beverage prices, core inflation, the total inflation excluding some of the volatile sectors that tend to, you know, hide some of the real trends, the core inflation was up 0.4% on the month, and that was a slight pickup in the monthly inflation. So inflation remained very, very sticky over the past several months, and the year-over-year core CPI inflation has been near 3.3% since June 2024. So right now, U.S. economy is still very solid. CPI inflation, it remains very sticky, and especially core inflation has been near at 3.3% since June 2024. So really, there is no such rush to have that Fed funds rate cut at this time. So PNC expects the FOMC to cut the Fed funds rate twice in mid-2025 by 25 basis points each. That will take it to a range between 3.75% and 4% by late summer. And then we expect the Fed will, you know, leave the rate there through the rest of this year.
Finally, Oshank, what are some regional economic updates? What about Northwest Indiana's regional economic growth? Were firms here still hiring?
Yes, Dee. So firms were actually adding jobs last year after cutting them in 2023. You know, it has been lagging the national employment growth over the couple of years along with the state. But that was mainly due to some of the dragging sectors, as we talked about previously, the manufacturing sectors, right? The manufacturing sector, you know, lost the jobs about, you know, 3.3% down from 2023 in December 2024. So some of the other sectors are still adding jobs. And, you know, for example, mining and lodging at about 8.2% growth in December 2024 from the previous year. We also see, you know, yearly gains in employment in professional and business services. So we expect that with this continued monetary policy easing, you know, the Fed has already cut a couple of times so far, but we think interest rate right now is still restrictive. But we expect continued cutting in that Fed funds rate will bring some relief for some of the manufacturing industry in Indiana as well as in Fort Wayne. We expect slower growth in total employment as monetary policy right now remains restrictive, even though the Fed has cut multiple times. But, you know, the restrictive money, restrict borrowing costs and discretionary consumers under a softer market this year won't allow for some industry like the housing sector and the manufacturing sectors to take off again. But for certain, some of the drags there abate somewhat and should allow for a slow and gradual recovery. And especially now, U.S. consumers still holds up very well with a solid labor market. The U.S. economy added over 140,000 jobs in January. That was below the recent pace, but still very solid. And there were also downward revisions on the jobs report. But job growth for all of 2024 averaged over 150,000 per month. That was down slightly from the previous year, but still it is still a good pace of a job gains. Either way, the job market remains firm entering 2025. So we expect job growth in Indiana, along with the nation, in 2025, even though there will be slower job growth, you know, with the lack of available labor, will likely hamper hiring as well. There are also some risks as well. I do want to point out, you know, restrictions on the immigration will likely weigh on the labor force, or a downside risk for job growth this year. And again, for some of the small business owners in Indiana, especially those or practice international buying or selling directly, like some manufacturing industries will face higher upfront costs under tariffs upon probable supply chain concerns.
I must say, Ersong, before I let you go, I am just so glad that you shared from the jobs report, jobs growth, and that even though we're not at the numbers that were expected, that we do still, in fact, have a solid labor market. So I thank you for always joining us, giving us a look at the local, statewide, and national economies. And I look forward to having you back with us next month.
Thanks for having me again. Looking forward to talk with you next month.
That was PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. economist Ersong Leong. For more information, visit www.pnc.com. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media.
Crossroads Northwest Indiana's Chamber is the innovative conduit for strategically supporting, collaborating with, and connecting Northwest Indiana's business community. Making up 7 counties and supporting over 600 members, Crossroads connects businesses to businesses and provides business resources for members. New initiatives that the Crossroads Chamber is taking on this year include Workforce Ready and advocacy for their members.
I'm Deanne Patina. We're here today with Rick Peltier, with the executive director of the Franciscan Health Foundation, and we're on Crossroads Connections podcast. So honor. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rick.
It's an honor to be here. I appreciate the invitation. Always nice to see you, my friend.
Yes. So I'm Deanne Patina. I'm the president and CEO of Crossroads Chamber. We are Northwest Indiana's chamber covering 7 counties, and we connect businesses to businesses. Rick, tell us what the chamber means to you. I know you're a proud board member of the chamber, but how does the chamber help Franciscan Health, the hospital, and tell us about your relationship to the chamber?
Absolutely. I think we've had the pleasure of meeting 8 years ago when
Is
I relocated.
That long ago?
Yeah, it feels like just yesterday,
it.
Right? Time
yeah.
flies. We're also best friends, if you guys can't tell. But I was introduced to the chamber very early when I moved here to Northwest Indiana. I'm a transfer, I'll tell you that, but it feels like home, and I love it. I moved here in the summer of 2017.
Okay.
So, and then obviously Franciscan already had a strong relationship with the chamber. So I was introduced to that, and then met you, and you came on board as well. Been a strong partner ever since. What has it meant to us? And well, first of all, Franciscan is a very proud legacy sponsor. $10,000 a year. I'm okay to share that because it shows our commitment to the chamber and to improving the lives of local businesses and organizations and partners in the Northwest Indiana communities that we serve. What it means to Franciscan, it's great to be a community partner, obviously. What it means to me personally, in addition to that, it's an honor to serve on the board. We've met some lifelong friends, first and foremost, here. We've built impactful community relationships through the chamber. We've actually been able to recruit some foundation board members on the chamber, as you know, one of those being Chase Loudon. I'm actually using his pen right now. It's like everybody has a Chase Loudon pen. It's
yes.
The most popular pen in Northwestern Indiana, maybe the world for that matter.
If you don't have
matter.
One, you need to get one.
That's right. Chase would be happy to give them out. How about the shameless plugs for Chase Loudon Financial Services here today? But it's been great. And also generous support. Not only do we support you, the Chamber are generous sponsors and supporters of our foundation as well. So it's a two-way street that's incredibly impactful to improving the lives and businesses of everyone here in the community.
Well, Crossroads definitely appreciate your legacy partnership for sure. Franciscan is the presenting sponsor of most of our largest events, our gala, our golf outing, our business expo, and our annual awards dinner. So we truly appreciate the partnership, Rick.
It's our honor.
Awesome. All right. Well, let me ask you a few questions and we'll get started. So
sure.
Can you give me an overview on Franciscan Health Foundation and how you serve the hospital's mission?
Absolutely. So we are the philanthropic arm of Franciscan Health. We are not a granting foundation, even though there are so many vital granting foundations in our community, like Legacy Foundation, Crown Point Community Foundation are the two most popular here in this area. Also, of course, Unity in the Michigan City area. But we are the hospital's foundation, basically. So our responsibility, my team and I, and it's a team of five, including myself, is we build those powerful, impactful relationships, what we talked about at the beginning, with game changers in the community who want to help us advance our mission. And we are called to serve the Sisters of St. Francis of Perpetual Adoration. That's who we serve at Franciscan Health. And our mission is continuing Christ's ministry in our Franciscan tradition. I know sometimes people hear that who maybe are not Catholic or religious, and maybe they get a little scared or confused by that. But please know what it means is, it doesn't matter if you're Catholic, if you're religious, we serve everyone in need. That's really what this mission means. That when you come to us in need, when you are a patient, you are somebody. You're not just patient number one in this room. You are Deampatina in room 250, and it's our job to provide the most quality, excellent, compassionate care that we can provide. And it doesn't matter who you are or what your status is in the community, what your financial status is, what your background is, we are called to serve everyone and treat everyone with that dignity and respect that everyone deserves.
Excellent, excellent. I know with the new hospital, you've made some amazing inroads, I'm sure, and impacted several other communities with the hospital being right off 65. And so it's awesome to see the improvements that are made through Franciscan and the commitment that you have to the community.
We're blessed to have that location. You're right. It helps people get to us a little more easier. It's easier access, right? We got to prevent and knock down those barriers, and access to healthcare is one of those barriers. That's why in the foundation, perfect segue, if you will, that we have a patient assistance fund that helps provide transportation. If you can't get to your medical appointment, you can't get the care that you need, and that's where it all starts. So we can provide a gas card for you for Family Express or Speedway, name your favorite gas station, and we'll do it. And we also pay for cab rides, Ubers, Lyfts, you name it. So we want everyone to know that transportation or access to the hospital or any of our physician offices or outpatient facilities, that should not be a worry or not a concern. If you cannot afford it or are having trouble, then the foundation will take care of that. And that's one of the ways, again, that you asked in your first question, how do we serve the mission? That's our way that we do it. There's so many funds, and you tell me, I can go into some of these right now if that's
sure.
Okay.
Let's do it.
But some of our most popular funds, if you will, patient assistance. So that helps with medication assistance, transportation, Strack and Van Til grocery cards, gas cards we talked about. We even paid for temporary housing. In fact, there was a patient in the Michigan City area recently. This was around the holidays before Christmas. She was expecting her second child and unfortunately was living in her car. Wow. And was too proud to ask for help, but we found that out during one of her visits. So Sister Petra, who oversees our mission services throughout northwestern Indiana, true servant to the mission, of course, and being one of our sisters, immediately called us and said, "What can we do here?" And I said, "What do you need?" And so we provided temporary lodging for her. Our prenatal assistance program visited her at the hotel to make sure she had the care and the resources that she needed. And we also brought food for her through our food insecurity program. So there's a wraparound service right there. Patient assistance, food insecurity, which we address, which is plaguing northwestern Indiana and the country, unfortunately, in the world, and prenatal assistance. So three services all in one right there for that particular patient. Many people don't know we have a Center of Hope program, and we call it HOPE because we provide hope for, we used to call them victims, but they're survivors. Survivors of sexual and physical assault or abuse, God forbid rape. Human trafficking as well. We've seen some, unfortunately, we save people from human trafficking who are presented to the hospital. And that's a very powerful program right there. That doesn't make you want to, help somebody and help these children and women who are, abused. I think it's pure evil, quite honestly, but it's our honor to help them and to have this program. And Women's and Children's Services, like our inpatient pediatric program with a partnership with Lurie Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. So we're really expanding that at the new hospital. You mentioned the services there. If we can keep more families and children here close to home in their own beds versus, mom and dad sleeping in their own beds versus driving to Chicago or Indy, that's wonderful. And it's been a very impactful program in partnership with Lurie Children's through our NICU. And also now inpatient pediatrics. And please stay tuned because we're going to have more. The plan is to provide more, offer more providers, specialists from Lurie Children's to continue to expand that pediatric care. There really no hospital has that here. And not sure what the reason is, but our job is to take care of what the present situation is and build for the future. So look for more expanded pediatric care going forward. And Lurie Children's is amazing. Top-notch care.
Right, yes. And so you actually have doctors from Lurie's on your staff. So
that's correct.
They're accessible pretty much all the time.
24/7. In fact, the medical director of our NICU, our neonatology, inpatient care center, is intensive care unit, is a Lurie Children's neonatologist. And he is just phenomenal. And he has brought himself and his team, and they're here. They work on obviously different shifts like all clinical workers do. But 24/7 neonatologist is there. We have a 20-bed unit, state-of-the-art unit. It's just phenomenal in the care that is received there, the way that care has grown, medical care. Think about it. Some of these babies are born, they can fit in the palm of our hands. And of course, years ago, the survival rate was very low. Mm-hmm. Now they say it's almost a 100% survival rate. It's just amazing with what they can do and Lurie Children's. So with our neonatologists, with our Crown Point NICU, which is the most advanced NICU in the region, by the way, it's level 3. The way that these certifications go in healthcare, think of a golf score. So level 1 is the lowest. You want the lowest, where others, you want to climb to the top. But level 1 is the best. Level 2, maybe Lurie Children's can help us get to level 2. Level 2 is Lurie Children's is a level 2.
Okay.
And in fact, possibly in between a level 1 and level 2 because of the most advanced care and what the services they provide there. But we're a level 3 status, which is wonderful for a smaller community like Crown Point and the surrounding area. So most advanced NICU in the region. And with our inpatient pediatric program, we have a pediatric hospitalist on staff 24/7, she and her team. So therefore, they are there to assess children when they present to our hospital and the emergency department. And if it's something we can treat here that avoids transport to Chicago, then it's a win for everyone.
Great. Yeah, that was an awesome addition.
Absolutely. We're blessed to have that partnership with Lurie Children's.
For sure. How is the foundation addressing healthcare accessibility for underserved population in the region?
Yeah, and we talked about a lot of that earlier with patient assistance. So we're knocking down those barriers, removing the barriers to healthcare access and affordability, number one. So access, we talked about the transportation, right, get you here to the hospital. But not only does the foundation, so we'll help with the medication assistance and the gas cards and grocery cards, as we said, and temporary lodging, but really our hospital system and the charity care we provide. So when you come to us, if you, and it could be any of us, I mean, who has the money to pay for, you know, a multi-$1,000 medical bill, right? You want to get on a financial plan, a payment plan, number one. And some, based on their current situation, it may take years for them to pay that back. So we write off a lot of that through our charity care program. And what we provide the community through charity care financial, which includes financial assistance, Medicaid, community health services, education, subsidized health care and services. These are things we provide that's a vital part of our mission, Deanne, that a lot of people don't see because it's not concrete, right? You can't see it. But over the past several years, we have averaged, with everything that I said with charity care, all those buckets that make up charity care, it equates to over $80 million back into the community that we're not charging our most vulnerable patients for health care because that's what we're called to do. It's who we are. And I give you these numbers not to brag because one thing we always say that our marketing team is charged to do, of course, is sharing our stories. But the sisters are very humble, and I respect that. And, you know, you very seldom do you hear, you know, Franciscan, you know, offers this. And now we've told them that it's not bragging. It's we have to get the word out, right? We have to celebrate the services, let them know we are offering world-class pediatric care thanks to Lurie Children. So it's not bragging. It's more letting the community know that we are here for you and sharing that story.
So how do you get the message out to those underserved or, you know, that is it just because they happen to go into the hospital and need service and then they realize other services are available to them or what's your messaging?
That's a great question. And because we're not, you know, it's not something you think about, right, putting on a billboard, that charity care that we provide. A lot of it is word of mouth. A lot of people know that due to our mission and our dedication to serving the community, especially those most in need, they know they'll receive that when they come to us. Another way to do that is partnerships through the chamber. If you can help tell our story, and our chamber partners can help tell our story. An opportunity like this today, being on Lakeshore Public Media, this is a vital resource in getting our story out there. But you're absolutely right. Most people will find out when they come and they present to us. But hopefully if we can do the best we can to tell our story and say, if you're worried about paying for health care, a lot of people are worried about the high cost of health care. I wish there was something we could do about that. But that's why if the foundation can help in any way to offset those concerns, that anxiety, please, my message today would be if you hear anything, you know, don't worry about that. Come to us. Come to receive the care you need. We are here for you. Everyone matters and will be treated with dignity and respect at Franciscan. And we'll take care of, like I said, a payment plan or maybe you'll receive 100% charity care. It depends on everybody's respective financial situation. Mm-hmm. But that's why we have financial planners, caseworkers, social workers there that'll sit down with every patient and help them assess the situation.
Excellent. Yeah, I feel like too often you hear that people don't go get care because they can't afford care. And so it's excellent to know that they can.
How many young people do we know, or really any age, don't even have health insurance?
Have health insurance.
Yeah,
right.
And they're just kind of rolling the dice every day.
Right.
Because of the high costs and concerns. It is a problem in the country. It truly is. Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't serve all the world's problems today, Rick.
I wish we could.
We can share the message, right?
That's
we can spread the message.
You save one person, you're making a difference, right? It's
yes.
the old cliche.
Yes.
It truly is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Can you talk about the partnerships Franciscan Health Foundation has built with the community and how they contribute to achieving your goals?
Yep, and we also kind of addressed this earlier, but happy to continue sharing this.
Yeah,
the partnership with the Chamber has been wonderful. Friendships, I mean, look at you and I, you know, we have that. We know we can joke around because not only are we get down to business when it's serious, right? We partner to make an incredible difference, the Chamber and the Foundation here and Franciscan, the hospital and the sisters in the community, but you and I are also friends. We can joke with each other. We are proud supporters, Franciscan is, not the foundation because, again, we're the hospital's philanthropic arm, if you will, so we don't grant gifts, but our generous sponsorship to you guys is through our marketing department, because they know the importance of that partnership. But also you support us with you sponsored a garden chair in our new hospital in the Healing Garden. That's wonderful. Still sponsorship opportunities. We have one more chair for $2,000. If anybody is interested, we put your name or your company's name right on that chair, very visible in the Healing Garden, as you can attest to. But getting back to the partnerships, also local Rotary clubs. Honored to serve on your board, also serve on the board of the Crown Point Rotary Club. I'm going to be the president this June to July, so look out.
Do they know what they're in for?
I don't know if they know what they're in for. I know I passed all the tests. Can you believe that? So I guess I have friends there in the right places. But just like the Chamber, the Rotary Club and Rotarians are some of our most generous supporters and sponsors of the new hospital, and with different naming rights and sponsorship opportunities there. Other civic groups, Lions Club is sponsoring a chair. Again, it's partnerships, partnerships, partnerships. We can't do this alone. And we talked about our food insecurity program earlier. We partner with the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana. Let's be honest, they wrote the book on battling food insecurity.
Yep.
They help us with our mobile
Chamber
markets.
Members.
Chamber members as well. That's right, Victor Garcia. Shout out to him and his team. And they also reviewed the space and certified our Fresh Start markets that we have in Crown Point, Hammond, and Michigan City, three locations. And what it means is these are basically healthy, certified through the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana food pantries. So you're not just getting, it's healthy food, right? You're not just going in there and getting non-perishable items, which we also offer, but they helped us move to healthier, lower sodium soups and non-perishable items. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, we have a industrial size refrigerator and freezer, thanks to generous donors. Would not have been able to do that without the support we've received from the community since starting this in 2021. So inside that fridge and freezer, proteins. Think about frozen chicken and protein with fish and different. Why am I having a hard time here? But the fish and any kind of meat and chicken, but also fruits and vegetables, right?
Okay.
And so it's a healthy food bodega or food market, if you will, and food pantry. That's very important. And we also have a food prescription program. So when you give somebody food, it's almost like a Band-Aid fix, right? Because what happens when the food runs out? The need is still going to be there. With our Produce RX programs, it helps us get to the heart of food insecurity. Why is that person food insecure? And what health conditions are they experiencing because of that? So now in our Epic, our medical electronic medical records, food insecurity is now a diagnosis that we have at Franciscan Health, because if you're food insecure, you're not healthy, it leads to cardiac issues, it leads to a lot of dental issues, right? If you're not eating healthy food with and not having the proper dental care, so many issues that we could sit down and that could be a show all into itself. Mm-hmm. Of it's just amazing what the general person, you and I, we're not clinical. I learned this, right, through our providers. I don't know this, but we learn it every day, and it helps us to share our story of why helping us make a difference for food insecure patients is much more than just a handout of food.
Mm-hmm. So do you do that on certain days, hand out food? You do it?
We have mobile markets.
Certain
times throughout the year. Used to do it monthly, and that was phase one. But since then, we opened our Fresh Start markets.
Okay.
They are open at both locations, or all three locations, excuse me, Crown Point, Hammond, and Michigan City, two times each month.
Okay.
And really, it'd be like you or I going to Strack and Van Til or Jewel, right? It's a free shopping experience. Our dedicated, certified social workers who are staffed there through our community health improvement program. And what a name, right? Community health improvement. No mystery of what they do, help improve the health of the community, right? And they're
right.
Wonderful. It's a wonderful team. We partner with them hand in hand. They're like our sister department, if you will. And so they go in, they shop with our team there, the community health improvement team, get the frozen proteins, the fruits and vegetables they need, the non-perishable items. We sit there and walk them through, okay, what kind of food allergies do you have, right? So they're getting what they need. And patients walk away sometimes with three or four bags of groceries. So that has expanded. That has taken our mobile markets, the handouts, to a new level, because they're getting more food. And then they're talking to a real person about their medical issues as well.
Okay. Excellent. Wow. They get a lot. One-stop shop.
One-stop shop, and it's open two times a month, every month. Yep. And you don't need to set up an appointment. You just go there. As long as you have a valid ID, you're going to get the help that you need.
Great. I'm Deanne Patina, President and CEO of Crossroads Chamber, here today with Rick Peltier, the Executive Director of Franciscan Health Foundation. Just talking about
proud
how
chamber members and a board
proud
member.
Proud chamber members, right? Board member, we'll get it all in again. So yeah, we're just here today talking about what Franciscan Health Foundation can do for those in need. They do really serve our community well. Are there any innovation projects or new approaches that the foundation is implementing to meet the changing needs of our healthcare?
You know, we talked about earlier how
we could just keep covering
absolutely
it,
how we're not, you know, not braggers, but I am proud to say my job is to share our story, right? Not to brag, to educate and bring awareness, build awareness. We offer world-class cancer care at our Munster facility, our Munster Cancer Center. And of course, you know, the big excitement in the Crown Point and surrounding community is thanks to Let's be honest. They wrote the book on philanthropy, right? What they've done for this community. Would this community be the same without the Dean and Barbara White family and their family foundation?
Right.
Thanks to the largest gift we've ever received in our foundation's history. We put it out there, and so we can share it again, $30 million. They're going to help us to build the Dean and Barbara White Family Cancer Center on our Crown Point campus, the same location as our new hospital there at 231 and 65. Broke ground last year. You were at that event, I believe, and Craig White was there to share his vision for his to recognize and honor, continue honoring his parents and their commitment to philanthropy. So that'll open, we hope, next year in 2026. You know, it depends on construction with the weather, and if the weather will cooperate. The ground's a little harder right now, as we know. Mm-hmm. But our goal is 2026, and Tun & Blank, which is our another great partner. They're the sisters in Franciscans construction company. They build these amazing facilities pretty quick. You talk about skill. It's amazing. You know,
yes.
I used to just know how to put duct tape on
things. I got to take the tour
things,
of the hospital and saw how they bring in those full bathrooms already built and things.
Yeah, they built them. They build these bathrooms for the patient rooms. It's amazing. On site at their Michigan City location, and then they transport them and then perfectly insert them into the hospital here at Crown Point. They did that for most of the restrooms in the new hospital. It's just amazing to have that talent. You know, I can use a hammer and a screwdriver pretty well, but I don't know if I can do that, Deanne. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can hang a picture if you want that, but I can't build you your own personal bathroom.
That's okay.
Different location.
I got another guy for that. Thing,
yeah,
so.
we all have a guy for that. Yeah, we should. Yeah, but yeah, but so cancer care, and we're excited in 2026 with the Dean and Barbara White Cancer Center coming.
That's great.
Absolutely.
That's great. Mental illness is growing. You know, it's a concern right now nationwide. How is the foundation addressing mental health and wellness in Northwest Indiana?
You know, that's one of those programs we have. By the way, I should say to take one step back. So the foundation stewards over 100 restricted funds in our Northern Indiana Foundation. So we always say, and I think we'll talk about this a little more in a little bit, but if you have a philanthropic heart, we can find a home for you in the foundation, because we have a fund that really gets to the grassroots, if you will, in the heart of everything. And one of those is behavioral health. That is something like we talked about earlier, food insecurity, that it's an issue that's plaguing everyone. Who doesn't need or couldn't use sometimes to talk to somebody, right, and get a mental health checkup, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about a lot of serious mental health conditions here. We're proud to have been offering very strong mental health services throughout Northwest Indiana, adult and pediatric, and it's all throughout the area, Crown Point, Dyer, Michigan City, Munster, you name it. But our Dyer campus is really the center for all of this, with inpatient and outpatient mental health care.
Okay.
And so coming in a couple of years with more changes, as we try to stay right competitive with the ever-changing healthcare industry, we are going to be relocating a lot of services from our Dyer campus to Munster, to our Munster Hospital. That includes the emergency department, surgery, women's and children's services. So, you know, the OB department there will go to women who are delivering right now. Dyer will then deliver at Munster as we are expanding our campus there. If you drive past, you'll see the construction going on, building up three stories and then an inpatient tower to be able to provide and house these services, because our Dyer campus then in the next 2 years will become a center of excellence for behavioral health throughout all of Northwestern Indiana, and we will expand our services there. The facility there will have more inpatient, outpatient mental health care. And I might say very quickly, we have one of the best kept secrets in the tri-state area, if you will, in Northern Indiana and Illinois, Michigan, that's why I say that, called the St. Francis Center. And so this is an inpatient unit that houses boys and girls. We have enough rooms for 15 boys, 15 girls, so 30 together, all together, 11 to 18 years old, who are really the victims. And we also say survivors, like we talked earlier about our Center of Hope. But I say victims here because they're victims of circumstances that they did not ask for in their homes. Maybe their parents were incarcerated, drug issues or drug addiction. And so then the children, unfortunately, have a lot of issues, and they're not able to really adjust to society. So we take them in, and it's a court-approved system, part of the state-run program here that we help with, obviously. And the reason why we don't talk about it a lot, because we want to keep the privacy and the safety of these kids. It's a locked unit, but we educate them. They receive their education there, and then there's so many stories, Deanne, of champion stories, if you will, that they are reintroduced into society. As a contributing member of society, we help them get their situation under control, and they go on to graduate from college, become the first person in their family to graduate and go on.
Great.
And then they come back and they tell their story to the current list of children, if you will,
right?
I mean, they're teens, really, but they're still children.
Right.
The current crop of children at the St. Francis Center, and they tell their story. And they say they thought they had no hope and they couldn't make it, and look what they're doing, and you can do it too. And that's part of our mental health program, and it's going to be world-class care that we deliver, and we already deliver right here in Northwest
Indiana.
That's
great. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So for our listeners who want to support the foundation, what are the best ways to get involved, whether through volunteer donations, advocacy?
Yeah, we said earlier that if you have a philanthropic heart, you can have a home. We know there are many choices, too. That's why every nonprofit, and you look at the chamber, right? I mean, you're only as successful as, look at how many members you have, how many dedicated members. Our chamber is amazing. I can say our chamber because I'm part of it. And the Crossroads Chamber is amazing. Lakeshore Public Media is part of that. And, Chuck and Carl's great to see them at the meetings. And we, have built a good friendships as well beyond the business relationships, which is very important. But partnerships and support, you can't be successful without them. You know, every nonprofit, we're a nonprofit, our foundation, 501c3 status, we would not be successful. Everything we talked about during this program here that we're able to provide, we couldn't do it alone. We couldn't do it without the generous support of our donors. And we call them, donors is the technical term, right? The technical fundraising, philanthropic
right.
term, but they're really foundation friends. They help make things happen for us. So the way to do that, call us up, visit our website. You can always donate online, franciscanhealthfoundation.org. Make sure you select Northern Indiana. Then you can find a list of all these programs and funds we talked about here. And you have a wide variety. Like I said, we always encourage people, everyone we talk to, pick the program right here. It's in your heart. What difference do you make, and what program is closest to your heart? That's the thing. We don't come into a conversation, if you will, with a particular project in mind. We build relationships. We get to know people. We find out what they care about, and then we offer opportunities to make an investment in our mission and to make a difference for those most in need. It's strictly 100% relational. What difference do you want to make, and how can myself and how can I, me and my team help you make that difference?
Excellent, excellent. Well, it was great to have you on, Rick, today.
It was an honor to be here. Thank you for letting us share our story.
Excellent. Yep, we'll be here next month again with the Crossroads Connections. Hope you can join us then.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guest, and we'll be back next week with an all-new show.